Welcome to Unyielded, thriving no matter what. In a world that is constantly changing, it can seem harder and harder to keep up. Yet, we all know those people who, no matter what challenges or changes come their way, they somehow manage to thrive. They're contributing their very best, they are engaged in what matters most to them, and they are achieving the success that they desire. In other words, they are creating the life they love to live, no matter what challenges and what surprises show up. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be moving up within an organization, you might be an entrepreneur, a business owner, a salesperson, or self-employed. Or you may just be that person who feels like something else is calling to you, and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us, so that when challenge or doubt show up, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's get right to today's episode. My guest today has one of the most beautiful spirits that I have ever encountered. She was widowed at a very young age with six children. Her story is one of community, of coming together, of finding your way forward one day at a time, and of always having hope. I absolutely loved getting to know her and every minute that I got to spend with her. Her name is Judy Corkery, and I cannot wait for you to meet her. Judy, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, it's my pleasure to do this. I'm very happy about this.
Good. And just so for the people who are listening, a mutual friend of ours, Sarah Corkery, was the one that introduced us, because Sarah was a guest on the show earlier. And then at the end of that interview, I said to Sarah, I'm like, hey, do you know of any other people who are inspiring and could give hope? And she said, I know who you need to talk to. You need to talk to my mother-in-law, Judy, because she has had quite a story. So that's, I don't know if you know that part, Judy, but that's what Sarah said to me.
Oh, I knew you said she had mentioned me, and I didn't know, you know, yeah. But she had said that she thought I would enjoy meeting you and doing this.
Yeah. So I'm very grateful to both of you. And she's right, because I got to talk to you before, and I know that you've had quite a life, a lot of adventure, a lot of times where, you know, hope and patience and faith showed up for you. So do you want to just kind of tell us a little bit about your story?
Yes, I would be happy to, dear. I was a little country girl, went to a country school, lived in a neighborhood where probably maybe a little village, I guess we could call it, where there were like 15 or so houses. A lot of young kids, a lot of fun. And life was pretty simple for me as it began, and it was going along pretty well. And when I was 11 years old, my baby sister, Kathy, who was just two, became very ill and was diagnosed with polio. It was a changing experience in all our lives. My brother, my parents, and myself were pretty much overwhelmed with the idea, because she was extremely sick. And she was transferred to a university hospital near us, and she was there for quite some time. When she came home, I think between where she was at the university hospital and the local hospital, she probably was away from us almost 9 months.
Wow.
My mother was able to travel and spend the day at the hospital with her. We kind of grew up. My brother and I, because of the disease, people were leery of us at first, you know. No one knew how you got it and why we didn't get it or anything like that. So we learned to entertain ourselves because Dad and Mom would go. Mother did not drive, so my dad would take her and then go back and get her. So we were kind of, during the summer, definitely, she was sick in the fall, but it stayed, in those first months were basically we were isolated. So I had my first isolation because we self-isolated. No one told us we had to, but
yeah.
So we, when she came home, I felt like I'd grown up. I was 13, lot of responsibility, simple responsibility, but things that had to be done at home when Mom wasn't there. So I was older from age, I thought. So maybe that's why after graduating from high school and getting my first job, I got married at 18. And I married a schoolmate a couple years older than me. His name was Gail. He was handsome, full of fun, and easy to be around. And as kids, and kids we were, we got married. And after that, we had children, bang, 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 six.
My goodness, six kids.
Yes, and it was like kids raising kids, you know, the first one especially. I could tell funny stories, but they're kind of embarrassing. So anyway, when I was 32, Gail was killed in a car accident.
Oh, my God.
And I recall that event as a dream, a nightmare, for a long time. It was just having to look at my six children sitting there and telling them that Daddy was gone, Daddy went to heaven. And the oldest child was at that time was 14, and the youngest was 2.
Wow.
So that was a really tough, tough time in my life.
I can't imagine.
It just, we struggled to stay afloat. We were fine. The neighbors, everyone, relatives, friends, you know, rallied around because we were, it was just one of those tragedies, you know, that happened. And you just, and, but we were so fortunate in the fact that many of our friends supported us, you know, by visits and food and maybe taking us on a vacation with them. So we actually were blessed in that way.
Yeah.
But it was a really hard time.
And I remember, Judy, when we spoke before, you really said how much the community was there for you. I remember a story about the tomatoes.
Yes. My picnic table, the day that that Gail died, my picnic table was covered with tomatoes and ready to be taken care of. And I never thought of the tomatoes again until a few weeks later, my dear, dear friend, Mary, came to the door and said, I have some things to put away. And she brought in quarts after quarts after quarts of tomato juice. And she'd taken them home quietly, took care of all of them, and then brought them back to me. And that's just one of many, many things that happened that just, I don't know how to explain it. The morning after he died, there was, I would guess, maybe 10 cars in the drive. And they were everything. We had a ladder up because we were painting the house. And that was down. I never asked if they painted that last strip or not or two. We were pretty close to the end. Anyhow, I turned around and somebody was doing something, you know.
Wow.
It was, and I think it's from living in a small community. Mm-hmm. I really do. You know, everybody knows everybody. And so, and it was one of those things that everybody just wanted to do something. I think we were, I don't know how to say it exactly. I guess we were, I guess blessed, as I would say blessed. Mm-hmm. And moved on because of that. I mean, that they supported us through through the next month, next year, into, and just, and they never really gave up.
Yeah.
There was a several, like a core of them that would call and say, would you like to go out to dinner, or would you want to go with us on a picnic or something like that? And it we got through it, but that was because we were just so lonely without him, and it just filled our days.
Yeah.
But there's something that I remember when I used to go out with the couples afterwards, no matter how many people you were with, you were still going in that back door alone when you got home. And that was tough for a while. You get used to it, but it was tough.
And be. It tough is probably was. An understatement.
It's just interesting that after I finally got a part-time job working at the hospital, and I worked about 3 days a week, and it got me out, it got me back into the world. Mm-hmm. All my kids were in school except the youngest was Brett, and he actually, my neighbor lady, the tomato lady, my dear friend, she took care of him in the hours that it, between the time that our kids got off the bus and till I got home, if I had to work the second shift. Otherwise, she still would watch him if I worked the first shift. So it was just, again, there another an outreach from someone who had a busy life herself, but always had time to help me. So, and in that particular situation, working in the admissions desk in the reception area at the hospital, that's where I began to visit with a lot of the people that came in, just helping them find their way and whatnot. But this rather familiar gentleman was visiting his father-in-law who had a stroke. Oh. And he's back then was hospitalized, you know, for a long time. Then you didn't just go home or go to the nursing home. So he would come, and his name was Lori Corkery was his name. And he would stop by because, ironically, his wife, Lois, passed away 6 weeks before Gail died.
Oh, my goodness.
And so we had actually gone to the services because so that's how we knew each other. And when he came into the funeral home at Gail's services, he looked at me. He didn't have to say a word. I mean, he knew what I was going through, and I appreciated mm-hmm. that. So as time went on, and he visited several times, and then we went to a mutual, again, wedding. I remember the day very, very, it was pouring rain. I didn't want to go without Gail. I thought, I just can't do this. I just don't, I'm sad. And so I got all dressed up, and my kids were happy to see me get dressed up and go. So I said Gail would want me to go. So I went, and when I got there and ran through the rain to the door, the gentleman said, "Ma'am, you left your lights on."
Oh no.
Yes. So I thought to myself afterwards, gee, he was nice to tell me, but why didn't he offer to go back out in the rain? So I went back and I got in the car, and I thought, I was soaking wet. I looked like a fool. And I thought, I'm just going to go home. This is a sign that I should not have come. And it's the oddest thing. It's almost like someone somewhere in my mind was saying, you need to go. You need to go. So I went back in, got wet again, sat down, and lo and behold, straight across from me was Lori. Everybody called him Lori. Mm-hmm. Across the church from me, basically in the very front pew, I was in the front pew because I was so late getting there. And I looked at him and I thought, oh my goodness, what a coincidence. But never really went on about the day. And I don't know if people have probably told you many times about feeling like the fifth wheel.
Oh, yeah.
you're always the fifth wheel. And when you're single like that, so there's always a fifth wheel table at every party you go to where all the fifth wheels sit together.
I've never heard it called that before. I love it.
And of course, it was all widows.
Yeah.
We were all sitting there in a little cluster. And here comes Lori over. He was at the bar getting a drink, and he came over and asked if I would like a drink, and I said, sure. So he came, and then he pulled up a chair and sat down, and so we just started to chat a little. He was so good-looking, too. I married two really good-looking guys.
Good for you.
Anyway, as the evening progressed, he just sat there, and he said, well, shall we eat dinner together? Because they were serving dinner. And so I said, sure. And so we went and sat down, had our dinner. And before the dinner was over, he said, would you like to go out with me sometime? And I said, I didn't want to seem too anxious, but I thought, yeah, I'm ready. And so our first date was, I loved movies, and he asked me what I wanted to do. And I thought we'd just go to a movie. Well, the movie was terrible, and come to find out, he didn't like movies. But anyway, we went out, got a hamburger, and it was just like everything else that evening was just off. It just off. And the hamburger, I swear it was cold. I swear to this day it was.
No.
That it just was almost omen after omen that this was probably not a good idea. So when we got home, we sat there in my driveway, and we began to talk about our spouses and how we were doing with our kids. And that we cried that night because I think we both knew what the other one was feeling and how lonely and how sad we were. Yeah. And he had 9 children, which that should have been a whistleblower right there. But, you know, at the time we were first dating, that probably wasn't exactly what we had in mind. But anyway, my kids were thrilled that I was actually going to have a date. So the two oldest girls were helping me get dressed and, you know, what I look, how you look good, mom. Okay. But when it got to where he was coming a little too often, they didn't think it was such a great idea that I was dating.
Then they changed their tune.
So.
Oh, my goodness.
We had a really fun dog, and Boots was his name. And Boots, always, after Gail died, and I think because so many people were coming and going all those months, and I think he was always barking. I mean, just growling when people would come. And the night that Lori got out of the car and came to the door, he didn't bark. So there were all these signs that I was taking as omens.
Yeah.
Hopeful omens, perhaps. I don't know. So anyway, that's kind of how it went. And after a while, we got to talking a little more seriously and knew that we cared a lot about each other, and smart people would have probably just kept it as a companionship relationship, but I don't know how we'd have done that with all those kids, you know. I just don't know. So
you had
when
15
he asked
me, together, right?
Right.
Oh,
yes.
My goodness.
And people looked at us like, you're really dating, you know, really? And so it was my parents, of course. My mother went a little into orbit when she first found out that he had 9 kids. But
wow.
And what you couldn't help but like him. Lori was a very likable man. He was a kind man, and I don't know, just gentle and calm. And I was the exact opposite. So it took a little mixing there to get things to come out even. But I think most of people thought were happy for us because I think they knew the lives we were living.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to get married. And of course, where would you go and live? And
that's a big family, Judy.
It is. My house would not accommodate us. I had a bungalow, a cute house that took care of us and the kids, Gail and I and the kids, but he lived in a acreage. And he was a carpenter by trade, but he also had a little farm operation going. So, and had, I don't know, he must have had 80 acres and, you know, area yard and all those things, because you always had to when you had 9 kids. Right. And I should have saw some, when I go to visit him, I should have looked around. I did look around a little bit, and I noticed that in about every tree in the grove had a makeshift playhouse or a treehouse. And these little kids, these boys, were already being a carpenter like their dad. They'd go out and build themselves a little ramshackle thing in all the trees. And I thought, well, isn't that sweet? Well, yeah, I don't know why they didn't fall out of the trees, because some of them are pretty small. But anyway, I guess I would have to say love conquered all. We just decided we could do it. So,
oh, my goodness. That had to take a lot of adjusting, though, bringing together the two families.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, because he brought them to visit. And here's another sign. When they came to visit, they all came in one car.
Oh, my.
So that's 9 kids and the driver.
They had to be piled in there.
They were. 2 layers. Oh, I mean, there's another sign that this, you know, wow, that's a lot of people. And when they came into my house, they sat around in the living room. It was kind of like sizing each other up, you know, looking at each other like, okay, well, I don't think I'm going to like that guy, that type of thing. They were trying to get their heads around what was happening. I think that this is going to be us, you know, so, that did not go over too well, but we got the kids together as much as we could that summer before we got married in August, and tried to have them around each other doing things. And in the meantime, Lori was trying to hold down a job, his carpenter work, which he had to have for a paycheck. He was trying to remodel the house, getting ready for us.
Oh, yeah.
And so I actually, you may have to delete this. I actually, when he was doing the construction and torn off the front steps in the front area, you had the kids and anybody that went had to go through the bedroom window. You had steps and you would crawl up those steps and go through a bedroom window to get inside the house. That's another sign. And we were looking at the calendar where the kids were. We were moving too early, but I wanted the kids to start the school year in the new schools. And so we, under everybody's advice, I ignored it and went ahead and we moved. And the moving day was like a circus, actually like a circus parade, because by the time they hauled everything that I was bringing, I mean, my friends had trucks, and so they came and they helped load and unload and all that stuff. It was just like a circus. And
wow.
So we got settled in. First, we got married and left our children. We didn't put them together until we were going to be back from a very short trip. So they were staying with people. I mean, the children and the Corcoran children had... The oldest girl was a college girl, so she was home, and they were managing. And a friend of mine came and stayed with my kids so that we could get away for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
So we basically brought them together then. Moving day came then, and here we came with the kids, the clothes, the boxes, the furniture I needed to keep, all this stuff, and putting it into a house that was only partly done.
Oh, so, my goodness.
So for a while, we had a kitchen, bathroom, dining room, and TV room all in this one section that was just a great big room that was not finished off.
Wow.
And that's where we had our dining room table. That's where I had my little kitchenette cobbled up. And we actually served supper on a card table and then another table.
Wow.
Or our meals, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Then my husband produced this wonderful, wonderful table that had benches that would seat all of us, at nice. One table. Before, there were four kids always at the card table at the mm-hmm. meals. So anyhow, we figured it all out. I just think sometimes the ones at the card table didn't know what we really had for supper if they didn't get passed. So
they might have gone hungry a little bit now and then.
I know. But anyhow, I'm kind of meandering here.
No, it's wonderful. And it's amazing the way that you guys, you know, came together. And so because I was so impressed, Judy, when we talked before, I was so touched and impressed. When you talked about some of the things that you did, you and Lori, in terms of, you know, bringing the family together and in just some of the things that you guys did, would you share some of those things?
And you're speaking of before we were married or after we were married?
After you were married, like, you know, and, you know, how you kind of honored, like, one of the things I'm thinking of is the cooking, how you honored both
yes.
families.
Today, in fact, a neighbor of mine, we were talking about cookbooks, and in later years, I made a cookbook, but of the combined recipes and how always trying to be sure that we did things the way mom used to do it, you know, mm-hmm. because it's hard. You go into a place where, you know, and the chili, I think I shared the chili story.
I love this story. You got to tell it.
Okay. So the first few weeks we were married, we decided to have chili for supper. And some of the girls were in the kitchen, and one of them, Shelley, came to me and she said, "Mom, they just put rice in the chili." And I said, "What?" And she said, "They just put rice in the chili." I said, "Well, just don't say anything. I'm sure it's fine. It's probably the way they do it." So for years, we had rice in our chili. And one time, many years down the road, one of the kids, we were talking, sitting around talking, and somebody said, I think it was Tom, he said, "Why do we always have to have rice in our chili?" And I said, "Well, we didn't ever have rice in our chili." He said, "It started when the Bedards came." And pretty soon from the other room, one of the older Corker girls says, "I just started that because," she said, "it would stretch the meat." So it was a new recipe that had never been made at the Corkers before that we thought it was traditional. So we ate a lot of rice over the years until.
Oh, I just loved that.
We had a lot of that. We had to back up and rethink things because, you know, I don't really know how to put it. It's your routine and their routine. Mm-hmm. They were farmers. We were just people that lived in a little acreage in the country, not farmers, but lived around and had friends that were farmers. So the kids were familiar with that life. But when we came in and they unloaded the trucks and out comes the golf clubs, and of course, these kids didn't have golf clubs. They had hammers. So, yeah. And that's what they used for fun. And so it was all these things that were, you could just see as we were moving in and living out of boxes and watching, you know, this house slowly mature and I should say develop. It was days went by like so fast. And yeah. We did make it finally into an entire finished house, but it was months after we moved. So
when you guys moved in, you said that Lori's oldest was in college. And how young was the youngest?
He was two as well. Two. Well, no, they were four. Brett and Matt were both the same age. We had a lot of duplicate ages, you know. And so, but the two youngest were four.
Wow.
And the oldest would have been the college girl. But yeah. We had graduations every year.
Every year.
Sometimes two at a time. And I always joked about it, but it was the truth. They got $100 and a new suitcase. And they basically, we kissed them goodbye as soon as we could.
You needed the space.
No, they were, and it was always a battle about who got. We had one bedroom that was only big enough for one person, but you had to be the oldest to get it. It was in boys. We had the 10 boys or the 9 boys, and then of course we had Chris. But they actually fought for that room, just to have the room. And so we figured it out, but all the way through, as I said earlier, maybe, we never forgot about Lois was mm-hmm. their mom, and Gail was my children's dad. And we had pictures always of them in an honored place. We never gathered for a holiday or anything when we didn't have a special mention of them. Wow. We included them all the way. We did a family video showing both sets of people, both families, and before we came together, and all the old pictures of the other life. Mm-hmm. And so that was a gift one Christmas. And I do believe it was one of our better gifts, because it showed that there were two families and then it became one family, but we had all those pictures to share and to keep for memories. So we tried. And sounds I think like it helped.
Yeah. Judy, it sounds like you did. It sounds like you guys did such a great job of honoring the memory and the special place that they had. I mean,
right. And the little ones who didn't remember had the older ones to rely on to tell them about their mom or tell them about their dad. They had no real, you know, they were pretty little, so their memory wasn't.
Oh yeah.
Could not recall, you know. And but I'm so glad that I never wanted that feeling to ever go away. I wanted them to know that they were loved by their mother and father, and try to keep that in mind, but also to respect us as the new, well, I don't like to say replacements, because you can never replace another person, but as a substitute or however you want to put it. And we worked hard to learn to like each other. You have to, sometimes it's not instant, you know, it's just not instant at all.
No.
So, and when you live together, go to school together, work together, because boys would work for their dad when they got old enough, or for Lori, and all the boys, I mean, he'd take a crew, and I mean, they learned how to work very young. And so but it takes a while to, and there are some that are turned out to be really quite good friends. And good. That's all we hope for, you know, especially the older ones. They needed, how should I say it? They became friends, but these little ones don't know the difference. The young mm-hmm. ones did not know the difference. They were just brothers, you know, the two little ones.
That's right.
And so it worked as good as it could. And we prayed a lot.
I bet.
Always prayed a lot. So,
and so Judy, I love the phrase that you said a minute ago when you said we had to learn to like each other. And to me, what's kind of embedded in there is that it had to take a little bit of time and maybe some patience that went into that.
Oh yeah. And things weren't pretty a lot of times. I mean, let's face it. They weren't pretty, and everybody said, oh, the Brady Bunch. I said, oh, no. No. No, it wasn't like it. And what was the one cheaper by the dozen? And they showed them out with their three or four grocery carts, you know, stuff. But I know the checking boys at the grocery store would practically run when they saw me coming in, because it was always a couple carts.
Want to have any part of that.
No.
Oh my goodness. And now you and Lori had a son together.
Yes, Christopher. Yes. And that was kind of interesting, because when I took one of the older girls, I should say, to college, older girls when they were little to kindergarten, I was probably one of the youngest mothers there, because we got married so young. But when I took my oldest girl to college, I was old by the time I got, and you know, having a baby at the age that I did, they always thought my daughter was his mommy if she was with me, any one of the girls at all, because I already had gray hair. So, I mean, I was, I think, 38 when I had Chris. So
wow.
it was, but he was, You know, he had privileges towards the end that none of the rest of them had. You know, more than two pairs of tennis shoes.
And he had his own room, probably.
Absolutely. He could move from room to room if he wanted to. So anyway.
Oh, my goodness. So Judy, when I hear this story, I mean, it's such a beautiful story. And I love your spirit throughout it. How did you guys make this work?
I think we had our days when we wondered why we ever tried this, when we had call from school or, you know, somebody didn't come home when they were supposed to, and all that uproar about where were they, all that we had. But my husband said to me, he said, how do we know if we hadn't done this, what our kids would do? It could be the same situations similar ones, and we'd be facing them alone this way. And we didn't always agree, you know, get the idea that every time we spoke, it was golden, because sometimes we had some conversations about some of this. But as far as I always remember that when things would get tough, what would you have done if you were by yourself when this happened? So we did lose a son in 47.
Oh, no.
Marty was the oldest Corkery. And I think that took 10 years off of my husband's life. I truly do believe it. He was accepting and very accepting. And I think we came together. You know, it was such a tragedy, so sudden. Mm-hmm. And I looked around me and I saw at every one of the families, a lot of them were married by then. There was families coming in. They died in Arizona. And we actually, the families, everyone came. They didn't bring their babies and things like that, but they actually came and supported each other and felt the loss. It bonds the family, but that doesn't have to be tragedy. It could be a wedding. It could be, you know, a new baby, all those things, all the happy things too. But that particular event really brought them all together and cried together. And then when Lori passed, the same thing. They were by our side for 24/7 when he was at the end. And they gathered together and wasn't just the Corkery sitting in one pile and the Bedard sitting in another. They intermingled, they comforted each other. So I felt, and I think before Lori had felt too, that we finally could see the bonding that we hope for. And we see it especially now in the next generation. They're just cousins. They don't talk about he was a Corkery or she was a Bedard. The second generation, I know by the third, they will have never, ever have any recollection of anything different. So we've been blessed. We really have. We were blessed.
Well, blessed, and also what you and Lori did to bring the families together and to create the bonding. I mean, it's a beautiful story, and it doesn't happen all the time, you know, that way. I mean, so they were lucky to have you guys.
Well, we were lucky too. I mean, I think I went from marrying this vibrant young man at 20 who was full of life and wild and fun and good and all that stuff. But when I had Lori in my life, I had a calm, which you can't believe would, with that many people around, I felt a calmness too. We were older. we couldn't run around.
Yeah, and you needed some calm at that point.
Yeah. Because I think that's what was good. He was a leveler. He was a calm, you know, some things were, of course, serious. Mm-hmm. But the little things, he taught me how to get over it. Just, you know, the little things that would rile me up in a day's time. You look back at it now and thank God he didn't do the same thing as I. So it was a good mix, because he needed a little lifting up once in a while by me, but we worked it out.
Yeah. So I have to ask, because it sounds like my husband is more like your husband. Rick, my husband, is so calm, so steady, and I'm the one that can get riled up. So what did Lori do to help you you know, not get riled up over those small things.
Calmly would kind of talk about what it was that I was upset about. And it was, you know, I almost laughed because I think about how silly some of it was, but some days were just like that. You know, if anything, I think sometimes when you get out of bed and you get the wrong shoe on the wrong foot, that's the way the whole thing goes all day.
All day.
And those are the days you just want to go back to bed. But a lot of it was small things. Some things were very, very serious. But he always tried, he said, you cannot, I would be so upset when something would happen in our family. And he would always say, we don't know. I said, why can't we just be like, and what we weren't like anybody else, but why can't we just be like them? They don't have, he said, you don't have any idea. He would say, you have no idea what's really going on. You know, he had a,
that's right.
And some days it made, you know, he was able to point out some pretty obvious things, but anyhow, I think it, just the tone of his voice, I you know, he cried when he was happy, he cried when he was sad, and I loved it when he cried when he was happy. He was a real inspiration, and my oldest son, Tony, was kind of objected to the whole thing to begin with, but over the years, he became to learn and learn to respect Lori. And And when Lori died, was dying, he said, can I talk to Tony? And so Tony went over to the bedside, and he looked at him, and he said, because Tony was always thought he was the dad after Gail passed.
Yep.
Anyhow, he said to Tony, how did I do? Did I do okay? And I thought, how beautiful was that? That it would be some of his last words was want to be reassured that he did okay. So I'm sitting here now with tears in my eyes now that I think of that. But you know,
so am I.
You know, he got to heaven so fast that I don't think that St. Peter even saw him go through the gate. The guy he was just a good guy. He just a good man. And not a genius. He was just a nice, hardworking, good man.
Yeah. Well, I love that too. And I've got to, thanks. Now you made me cry, but that's such a beautiful thing. And it's also such a show of respect to your son, Tony.
Yes.
Wow.
And he said to me, you know, cause I worried about he and his sister, Shelley, really his struggle with the move. They were at that tender age, you know, but he said to me, afterwards, he said, I wouldn't have changed. And he's gone on to do public speaking in a position that he has. And he said, when people say, when they hear that he came from this family, his weird family, he would always say, I wouldn't change a minute of my life, my childhood. Wow. And that he kind of forgot how much fuss he made when he didn't want to move. But we would have changed that if we could.
But what an accomplishment. I mean, what a compliment that is for what you guys did.
Yes. He lived with him long enough and saw what we were trying to do. And that's one kid's thing. And they're so good. They were good to us. They're so good to me, all of them. And I'm blessed.
So when we talked earlier, you said that despite whatever challenge or whatever was going on, because I asked you, how did you make it through so many things? And you said, you always have that attitude of I think I can.
Yes, that's exactly. And that's how I approach everything. And sometimes I can't. But in this case, I think we felt good about how it all turned out. I said, it was not perfect, but it was good.
Yep. And now, okay, so I also have to ask you, because I loved the tomato story and the chili story. There was one other story you told me when we talked before. I think it's when you took the kids, you're going on vacation with someone to St. Paul.
Yes.
To St. Paul.
The Schaefer. Yes.
Yeah.
The Schaefer.
in the watch the suitcases on the car. Can you just tell me, I love that story, Judy.
Well, they were kind enough to invite us along, and they were one of the big supporters of us. And so I decided we had a station wagon, and they had a station wagon, but we couldn't all get in the same car. So I just told the kids, no GPSs or anything then. I just said, watch for the suitcases. Watch for the suitcases. And we would be in a four-lane drive. They'd all be screaming, they're in the other lane, they're in the other lane. And we actually made it, but how foolish, I thought, to take off with the six kids in the car and just follow suitcases all the way through Minnesota. So,
but you made it.
We had a great vacation, by the way. Yes.
Oh my God. What an adventure. And you know, I'm so glad that Sarah connected us, because I can see why. I guess so Judy, this has been absolutely delightful. Anything that you want people to know when they're going through a hard time?
I think they just need to know to have hope, and know in their heart down deep that you can do it. You can get through this. You just have to, at times when you think you can't, just take a deep breath, say a prayer, and just take that day. Just take the day, and don't worry about yesterday. It's over. Tomorrow is not here. Just get through the day that you're having the tough time, and you'll see as time goes on, there is an answer somewhere, and you will find it. So I guess that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I loved when you said, when we were talking earlier, you said, you know, you may not see it. It's somewhere down the road, but it's there.
Yes, it's there. Nice. It might not be a marriage situation, maybe something else, but you know, or it's just, I'm so glad that it all went the way it did. I don't know how to say it. I just know that somebody was guiding me. I feel that I had someone guiding me, and perhaps it was Gail. I have no idea, but it just, when I felt low and didn't know what to do, it seemed like the next day was better. So,
yeah. Sometimes that's all it is too. Just make it through today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's been my delight to talk to you. I just think you're a marvelous interviewer, and if I overdid, we can take care of that, right?
No, you did a wonderful job. It was just such a pleasure. I just can't thank you enough.
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you.
I don't know about you, but there were so many beautiful moments and pieces of her stories that just truly touched my heart. Here are some of my favorites. Number one. When friends want to rally around and help you, let them. Don't worry about how much time they are spending on you or feeling indebted to them. Instead, in the future, just find a way to pass it on to someone else who needs it. Number two, her story really illustrates to me that when tragedy or challenge strikes, the support that the community and friends make, it creates such a big difference, and that support makes the challenge just a little bit easier. I absolutely loved the tomato lady story. And I think that we all, you know, at some point in our lives, we all need a tomato lady, right? We need that person who just shows up and does what needs to be done without being asked. And maybe, just maybe, we can all be that for someone else by simply looking around and asking ourselves, what can I do to help? Number three. Judy told the story of how she and Lori cried together on their first date because they both understood what the other one was going through, having both been widowed, and also that they really understood what the other person was feeling. That speaks to me about how finding someone who truly understands you and who really gets you is just one of the most precious gifts in life. Number four, when the commitment is there, you can figure out the steps. Number five, sometimes you have to learn to like each other, and that can take work and a lot of patience. And finally, number six, when going through a hard time, have hope, believe in yourself, and just get through the day, because the answer or the way forward, it is there, even when you can't see it yet. These were just some of the moments that truly resonated for me and touched my heart. And I have to say, it's not really a takeaway, but I loved the chili story. That will bring a smile to my face every time I think about it for the rest of my life. I truly hope that you enjoyed Judy's amazing spirit as much as I did. And I feel that my life was enriched by meeting her. And by the way, if her last name sounds familiar, it's because her daughter-in-law, Sarah Corkery, was a guest on the show earlier, who also has an amazing spirit. If you found this podcast helpful, please consider subscribing, as well as leaving us a 5-star review below. If you know someone who could benefit from the podcast and the message that we're spreading, please tell them about it. This has been the Unyielded Podcast, and I believe that thriving is not a destination. It's truly a process, an evolution, where we are continuing to expand and maybe even explore who we are. It's how we flourish, though, and how we can direct our energy into a place of positive energy. My life's work is to change the world for the better, one life at a time. I hope that you'll help me do that by sharing your work.